on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to another edition of the YoteCast podcast. Great to have you, as always, for the YoteCast podcast. Each and every week, we have episodes dropping every Thursday throughout the course of the USD year. We have interviews with coaches, student athletes, administrators, and so much more to get you, keep you up to date with what's going on in Coyote athletics. Coming up in the show today, we'll preview North Dakota State as the Coyotes open up conference play in football on Saturday. We'll preview North Dakota State with Sam Niederman, the play-by-play voice for the NDSU Bison. Also coming up in the show today as well, Tanner Peterson, as we talk about mental health, because it is Mental Health Awareness Week this upcoming week, and Tanner Peterson recently hired as the mental health coordinator at South Dakota. And also in the show, we will chat with Avery Van Hook, the freshman setter who has been starting for USD, get her thoughts on the transition to college volleyball, Division I college volleyball. In this podcast, we will talk to Tanner Peterson. South Dakota earlier this year made an announcement that they had hired a new position in athletics, and Tanner Peterson was that person. Tanner Peterson is the coordinator of mental health at South Dakota, the mental health counselor, if you will. And it's a position that South Dakota added as a continued effort in providing resources for student athletes. Now more than ever, it feels like mental health has been an issue. And it comes up not only in student athletes, but it comes up in people's everyday lives, right? We all have dealt with some form of mental health issue at some point in our life. And it may be short term for some people. It may be long term for other people. And the goal is that eventually we can get people the help that they need so that they can, you know, have a better life. Live without the anxiety, live without the fear, without the depression, whatever it may be. And Tanner Peterson is helping that at the University of South Dakota as the student athlete, the coordinator of student athlete mental health. And, you know, as I had Tanner on the show this week, it leads into Mental Health Awareness Week, which is coming up next week. And you will notice, whether you watch on TV or you're in attendance at the Coyote football games the next couple of weeks, that South Dakota will be wearing green ribbons on their helmets, and that is about mental health awareness. And it's an effort nationwide so that we can continue to help raise awareness for mental health issues that people are dealing with, and continue to encourage people to get the help that they need. And you may not think that you need help, or maybe you think you can work through it, but sometimes just talking to a trained professional can certainly help. You know, I said it, we've all been through mental health issues in our lives, right? At some point in your life, you've dealt with some depression, and it may be after the loss of someone, it may be after the loss of a job, or something changed in your life. And some of that, I think probably one of the biggest things that we deal with is anxiety. We've got a lot going on, right? Our lives are busy. They're busier than ever right now. You know, you might wake up early in the morning and maybe you got to get the kids ready to go to school, and then you've got work all day, and then you've got a late meeting, and then you got to feed the kids, and you got to put them to bed, and somebody's got to do laundry, whatever it may be. I mean, that's a lot to add up to people. And it doesn't help when we get onto social media and some of the other things, and we see comments made by others. It's an incredible world. Social media has continued to change the world. And there's a lot of good in social media, but there's a lot of bad in social media, right? It allows keyboard warriors to sit behind a potentially a fake name and say whatever they wish, and without even any thought of what it might be doing to somebody. You know, we recently have seen a number of issues where there have been death threats made because of sports. Right, we saw it in the Colorado State game. The young man from Colorado State made a hit. It was late. It was a hit that we've seen 1,000 times. That is a late hit. but it happened to sideline one of the top players for the University of Colorado. Before that game got done, his phone number and his mother's phone number were posted online. And unfortunately, they both received a ton of messages. They both received death threats, and that's something, you know, that people have to work through. We see it with when the game's on the line, whether it's a quarterback that makes a mistake or a wide receiver or a running back to fumble the ball, the kicker who misses the field goal, right? We've seen then it's just an outpouring of rage on social media. And, you know, I don't care if people say they don't follow that stuff. It gets to them, right? At some point, they see it. And so social media can be a really, really good thing, and obviously it can provide some challenges. And I think that's something to think about as we continue to raise awareness for mental health. And it's hard because you might walk by someone and not know that they're dealing with something. And it's hard to – you can't just – ask somebody if they're going through some struggles, right? Sometimes it's just a, hi, how are you doing? A quick conversation, check in with them. You never know where that might lead. And for the people who are dealing with some things, it's hard because you maybe don't feel comfortable stepping up. You know, I think this is a challenge on both sides. Both sides are uncomfortable speaking about it with the other side. But as we continue to make it normal, as we continue to make it the strength of what we have to discuss the things that you're going through, to discuss with someone, reach out to somebody, a trained professional, whatever it may be, because we can do so much to help somebody that's right next to you. And they might be going through a tough time, and you never know what that hello and a smile will do for their day. So, I mean, I don't mean to make this a podcast that is sad and gloomy, but it is the time of year where we need to have these discussions, and we continue to have discussions. And had a great conversation with Tanner Peterson this week as he discussed mental health with student athletes, what drives the mental health issues, what can we do to help each other, some of those things. So we had a great conversation about that, and it all leads up to Mental Health Awareness Week, which is officially underway on Sunday and will run through Saturday, October 7th. But again, you'll notice South Dakota and other teams wearing the green ribbon on their helmets, and that is and other teams as well. They will wear pins of some sort or ribbons pinned to their uniforms, whatever it may be. But college athletes everywhere continuing to try to raise awareness for many different things that we have and challenges that we have in our world, and they use their platform to continue to have the conversation. So let's keep having the conversation. If you are somebody who is dealing with mental health issues and it's becoming a real struggle for you, please find a way to get help. Find the person that you trust that you can discuss this with. And if you'll remember, we've talked about this before, but it's the fourth year that Helsinki's Hope Foundation is curating a collective week of action focused on eliminating stigma and increasing mental health resources for universities and colleges nationwide. I mean, it's Mental Health Week. It starts on Sunday officially, runs through Saturday, and it all culminates with World Mental Health Day, which is set for October 10th. And if you'll remember, Helsinki's Hope is a foundation that's dedicated to honoring the life of Tyler Helsinki, a former Washington State quarterback who lost his life to suicide. And so they continue to honor him by Helsinki's Hope Foundation, and they are behind all the colleges and universities that are putting helmet stickers on their helmets, or staff that is wearing green ribbons, or other student athletes who are wearing whatever it may be to support the cause. And so really appreciate all the effort. And again, if you are struggling with something yourself, please find a way to get help. Find somebody you trust to talk to. Find, there's numbers that you can call and get your help and some of that stuff. And sometimes it's just the conversation. Just have a conversation with somebody about what you're dealing with. And let's find a way to help everyone continue to move forward. This week, I caught up with Tanner Peterson. Tanner, first of all, congratulations on the job and welcome to USD. Yeah. I know you've been getting settled in your new position with USD and kind of working closely with athletes. Yeah. What is kind of your background as you take over this position?
Yeah, so my background really stems out of a spectrum of mental health and athletic counseling. I have my master's degree in sports psychology, along with my master's in mental health counseling from Minnesota State University, Mankato. So I really pride myself on being able to kind of dabble along this spectrum of, you know, the clinical mental health concerns, but also being able to, you know, work with athletes on more the performance-based stuff and more the acute performance concerns that come with mindset and navigating sport between the ears. So I would say I have a really unique background that stems along that mental health and performance psychology lens.
Positions like you have seem like it's a growing thing across the country at colleges and universities as student athletes continue to be at the forefront of so many different things. USD has added a position. Why did you feel like USD was a fit for you?
Man, I felt like USD was a fit for me for a lot of different reasons. It was always a dream of mine to work at a Division I athletic department and serve the student athletes and be that mental health resource. And so, when I saw this position open up, I was like, geez, close to home, Division I. I know a lot of people that have a lot of good things to say about USD. It's really a dream come true. And I think that's been a theme with everyone you've talked to around with me with my position, that this has been a dream of mine, and to be able to accomplish it at this point in my career and be able to have an impact at a university that wants to put mental health at the forefront of what it means to be a Coyote student athlete, it just really excites me, John. It's really exciting.
We've seen over the last several years, and maybe within the last decade, more and more student athletes who have taken some time off from competition as they deal with some things they're personally going through. We see it at the professional level as well. There seems to be a lot of pressure on athletes at about any age that you can come up with. Are the mental health issues, is it actually a bigger thing now, or is it something that we've just educated ourselves on and kind of know more about?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think if you were to reflect back on the last 100 years, we think about, certainly I think when we think of we think of mental health now, a lot of our second thought goes to COVID, the impact that have. But I think when you think about the past 100 years, certainly we've had some really big life events that have shifted our, that have really had drastic impacts on what it means to be human. Have we addressed those concerns in terms of mental health needs at that time? Maybe not in the 50s, 60s, 70s, or 80s. And so I think we're recognizing that mental health is a big need. And as we learn to unpack those layers of what it means to have mental health concerns and how mental health has integrated within physical health, the deeper we get into that, the more we realize, that maybe we don't need to be at the lowest point in our life to go seek a counselor, and maybe we can go seek help. Maybe when just we're struggling with this one area, rather than having it expand to all areas of our life. And so I think it's a little bit of both of, we're beginning to recognize that mental health is valuable and important and can shape and shift the way that we live our lives, but it's also we're seeing different life events come up to where, hey, maybe this is more prominent and we need to dig into this.
When something surfaces and mental health is a part of the conversation, it's kind of a blanket statement, and I think people always wonder, what does it actually mean when somebody's dealing with mental health issues? It doesn't necessarily mean they're about to be pushed to the brink of things, but there are different varieties of mental health issues.
I think oftentimes when we hear the term mental health, we all of a sudden assume that this person's at their brink. We think about the really intense depression, the intense anxieties, the really far side of the spectrum when it comes to mental health. But in reality, it isn't always like that. The spectrum of mental health, I think, mental health can be a good thing. We can have good mental health. We can have somewhere this medium gray area mental health. We have good days, bad days, and I think that's where a good chunk of the population lives in is this, we have good days, we have bad days, and it all kind of averages out. And then we have the other side of the spectrum where it's, you know, hey, maybe we're having more bad days than good days. Maybe a life event happened and we're really struggling. And I think that's when you might start to see people start to take a step back and readdress some of the priorities that are going on. And they're seeing how their maybe struggling mental health is impacting other areas of their life that were previously doing better. And so I think we're seeing this new wave of mental health, and we're seeing it show up on different injury reports at the professional and college level, which is great. It re-emphasizes that notion that physical health and mental health are kind of on the same platform. And it's okay to take a step back, just as it's okay to, hey, I rolled my ankle last Saturday, I think I'm gonna miss this week. I don't see what's the difference. And certainly that's a very new way of looking at mental health. But I think this new way is gonna be the future.
You know, as you look at things like mental health, I think one of the biggest challenges with it for a lot of people, and it's probably different for you as a trained individual, but for many of us, the struggles that somebody is going through is not always visible on the surface, and that provides some challenges.
Yeah, I think it provides a lot of challenges. It's knowing someone sprains their ankle, like I had said. They might show up to class or the weight room or practice the next day in crutches or a boot or with ice, or there's something visible that we can see that shows this person isn't doing well. But if someone's experiencing really intense anxiety, or they had a parent just pass away and they're really struggling with that, there's no real telltale sign from someone who's not a counselor that, hey, this person might be struggling. And in that can provide those challenges for the individual to speak up and say, hey, I'm struggling, because we're taking everything off and we're extremely vulnerable in that state. It's really challenging to point that out, to recognize that and see when someone is struggling. I think that's one of the biggest challenges in terms of mental health.
What can we do as a society in our everyday lives to continue to try to help limit these issues for people, even if we don't know they're dealing with something?
Knock on wood if you've heard this before. But I think it's talking about it. It's having conversations. And sometimes it takes a heck of a lot of courage to say, hey, I think I'm struggling with this. Like, can you hear me out for a second? And I think 99 times out of 100, someone's willing to say, hey, yeah, like, what's going on? Because we would rather have that conversation of what's going on right now rather than, you know, having a conversation later about a different topic. And so I think it is about having conversations like this, talking about anxiety, depression, recognizing that, hey, it's, you know, humans have emotions and it's okay to talk about them. That's okay. It's okay to have a big life experience and struggle with it, struggle to process it, struggle to move on from it. I think that's part of what makes us human, is that the innate challenges, the innate suffering that comes with being, you know, human. And so having those conversations, having the curiosity and the courage to lean into that uncomfortability, recognize it, and move forward anyway, and talk about some of these challenges, whether they be, you know, eating concerns, anxiety, depression, grieving, or just some of the, you know, confusing nature on, you know, everyday things. It's okay to talk about them, and, you know, the more we push them away, the more we push them down, the more they're going to show up in ways that we don't want them to. And I think that's why it's so important to talk and feel all these different things that go on for what it means to be us.
Sometimes we get so wrapped up into what we want to see and some of that stuff that when somebody is out for personal reasons. That seems to be the language now that is associated with mental health. You might hear some people at the professional level as fans say, just get over it and move on, toughen up, things like that. Or maybe some of these people don't come forward soon enough, because coming forward to talk about it, either in their mind or people close to them, feels like a weakness.
Yeah.
How do you respond to those things?
I mean, I think being vulnerable is going to be the greatest showcase of strength that anyone can do. I think that's why it's so gall darn hard to do it. If we think about the timeline of mental health, we're just really hitting the tipping point, or the tip of the iceberg, when it comes to mental health being engaged within what it means to be a healthy human. For the last hundreds of years, thousands of years, we didn't really even recognize mental health. And I'm going to take a guess and say that humans were still having really challenging experiences. They had anxiety, they had depression, but they were just, air quotes, crazy. And we know that's just not the case. And so, like I said, we're just hitting that tip of the iceberg for what it means to explore that mental health avenue.
What do you see as the biggest drivers or factors for student-athlete mental health issues?
I think, and we had chatted about this before, but I think we often hear about social media. And social media can be great, but social media is also a double-edged sword, and it can also produce a lot of different challenges for student-athletes. But I would also go and add that being a student-athlete isn't super conducive to mental health and wellness. And I think that's why individuals in my role are so important, and to be that resource for student athletes. We know that they have really busy schedules. They're missing classes. They're on the road. And yet they're asked to be a student just like everyone else. And while I think that's fair and all, but I also think providing the resources that I'm able to do and have that sports-specific nature to help them navigate what's a really unique experience in being a Division I student athlete is so important.
I think people don't understand, and I've said this to people as I've traveled with some of these teams, the amount of time that not only goes into classwork, and it's so much more time than just the games that we see these student athletes perform in. There's weight room time, there's a lot of film time, there's team film, there's solo film, there's things like that. I mean, their schedules are just crazy. I would imagine that just understanding how to balance your schedule is a big, big factor in just mental health, and as you talked about a lot, anxiety.
Yeah, I think you'd said the word there, of balance. And that's such a nuanced term that we strive for here. We want that student and the athlete experience. We also want them to excel. But also, in excelling, there's a lot of strains that come. If we want them to excel, it's extra work, it's extra reps, it's extra hours at the study table working on academics. But at the same time, we want them to be high-achieving social individuals, leaders outside the classroom, out of the football field, be involved in clubs. And so I think we can see, while we're striving for this balance, we're stretching them between multiple different areas, which is challenging. And I think we also have to remember, hey, they're 18, 19, 20 years old. And I think anyone listening, it's fair to say, I'm 26, 27 now, but I know I wasn't always super responsible when I was that age, and to see how they handle all these different challenges and reach out to me as a resource and other resources, I think it really showcases the type of student athlete we here have at the University of South Dakota. And certainly, I think it's human to struggle, but I think we can take pride in what we're seeing and how they navigate these challenges.
How would you describe your role as, are you just someone who's there for if someone needs you? Do you walk around and look for signs? Is it a lot of communicating with coaches and or maybe teammates? I mean, you don't want to, I know there's challenges with privacy and not getting too many people involved, but it really, truly, like, one of the biggest cliches, it takes all of us. And for something like this, it truly does take all of us to be able to understand some of the signs and signals.
Yeah, it takes a village, that's for sure. I think my role right now is really focusing on providing that individual mental health, those individual mental health services for student athletes. I'm certainly working with coaches on, you know, generating those relationships. So when they do see something, when someone does say something to them, that they know they have a direct line to a resource that can help their student athlete navigate whatever challenge they're going through. But you'll also see me, like, later today I'll be bopping around to different practices. And for me, it's about being visible. I want the student athletes here to know my name, to know what I do, and to know that I'm invested. And so when 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 5:30 hits, and I'm at their practice, they recognize, okay, there's Tanner again. He's the mental health guy. If I'm struggling, I can go see him. And maybe it's hanging out after a game for 5-10 minutes. And 9 times out of 10, student athletes are going to blow by me like I'm not even there, and that's okay. But that one time when someone does stop and say, hey, Tanner, can we chat for a second? That's what it's all about. That's why I'm here. That's my purpose on being here. That's why I do the job, frankly, is because I want to be that resource for student athletes to reach out when they are struggling. Ideally, no one ever struggles, and they have a breeze here and an amazing time here at the University of South Dakota. But we know that's simply not how life works, and when life does its thing, I want to be that resource.
Tanner, I really appreciate your transparency and your openness to discuss some of this, because I think for a lot of people, whether they're dealing with things or not, just simply educating and understanding things is extremely important. And hopefully we can continue to educate people and help them understand what some of these individuals, coaches, student athletes, and other people involved go through. So thanks so much for the time.
Absolutely. Thank you, John. Like you said, it's conversations like this that, you know, hey, maybe there's someone struggling that's listening to this, and they say, hey, you know, maybe Tanner's onto something. You know, I think having these conversations is really what it's all about. So such a privilege to join you on your show, and happy to help.
That's Tanner Peterson. He, of course, is the coordinator for student-athlete mental health at the University of South Dakota. Great conversation with him, and I hope you were able to take something from that. Continue to share his name with student-athletes at USD, especially maybe someone that you think is struggling. And again, if you're struggling yourself, please find someone to talk to, and sometimes those conversations can go a long way.
South Dakota volleyball team back home this week for 2 matches in Summit League play. The Coyotes take on Kansas City Thursday night at 7 o'clock, and then the Coyotes back home for an early afternoon contest Saturday against Denver. We're joined now by the Coyotes setter, Avery Van Hook from Marion, Iowa. True freshman getting the opportunity to play for the Yotes. Avery, what's it been like here in your adjustment to volleyball at this level? And I know it's, you know, it's been up and down for the team so far. You had a good 5-match run, 5 straight wins, but what has this adjustment period been like for you?
So we came in July and just kept playing. We played every day and we're lifting and stuff, so we got used to the team a lot from that, which all of us freshmen are very grateful for, just like getting used to the pace that we play at. My club team ran a really fast tempo, and so coming here, just setting those higher balls, giving those like hitters time to like transition and hit, was a big adjustment for me. And then we went into preseason. We were doing 2-a-days, and so we had 9 days or something like that before we played our exhibition, but we had 18 practices to get our rhythm down and stuff. And yeah, it's been fun. It's been challenging, obviously. I am a freshman, so just like getting used to living somewhere else, making my own food, that type of stuff has added another challenge to it. But our team is really great at like just letting everybody in and being so welcoming. And yeah, it's been great.
You know, as you talk about just the adjustment and just setting for some of the hitters, how does that timing, how do you figure out the timing with different hitters, because their approach to the net is very different, and it's got to be one of the bigger challenges for a setter?
Definitely. you got to have feedback when it comes to it, from the setter, from the hitter, from the coaches, all of it. It's going to, the connection's not always going to be perfect, and you still see that, like, there's got to be tips and stuff, but the game is an imperfect game at the end of the day. So just like battling through those, and like we said, we had those 9 days of two-a-days to get through it and figure it out and make our lineup and stuff. And you've seen, like, our lineup's been changing, so you have to get used to other hitters. But feedback at the end of the day is what's going to make our team the best and make us all successful in the end.
You've got a lot going on when you're playing and you're trying to receive a pass from someone and then get a perfect set to mm-hmm. whoever. How do you decide where that set is going to go?
A lot of it is scouting, where there's a short block, that type of thing. And then as a setter, you have to have a pretty good peripheral vision of, like, if our middle's going on a three, is that middle on the other side of the net going with her? If she's not, our middle's wide open for that. If she is, our right side's open, and there's going to be a late block. So it's a lot of scouting and seeing, like, where their block is set up, if they're further out or are they pinched in, and where our hitters are going to have the most success.
Is there anything more fun than surprising the defense and dumping that thing over the net?
definitely not. It's definitely like a thrilling moment. It's like, oh yeah, like I did something. And then obviously our team gets really hyped behind us, and I think that it just like adds another level to our game. And like our coaches have said, like me being offensive is helping our hitters in the end. It's making them more open. And then once our hitters are going and they have someone on them, it makes me more open. So it just adds a whole nother level of depth on our team.
I always wonder if people appreciate enough the quick transition that young players make to a program of this caliber and this level. How would you describe the differences maybe from high school and club volleyball to playing at the Division I level?
It's a lot more. Like, you are playing more, like, at the end of the day. But I think it's more fun. It's adds a whole nother level of competitiveness. Like in high school, we would play one team a week, and now we're playing a game on Thursday and then Saturday. So you have to have a quick transition, but you have to also have a short like memory, because one play doesn't go right, there's 24 other points, right? And the teams, like, they don't stop, they don't back down, and you have to keep fighting, and the other team's gonna keep fighting, because if once you go on a lapse, like, that gives them momentum. But you have to find a way to get yourself back on, and it's mentally challenging, but at the end of the day, it's a lot more fun, I would say.
You mentioned one of your challenges to the adjustment to college is making your own food. I got to ask, are you learning homemade food, or are you an expert with the microwave? How are we going about this?
Well, in Kaya right now, we're in like a suite, so we don't have an oven or anything. So my like mac and cheese in the microwave is getting me through, or I like to buy some muffins from the store. My dad and mom are good cooks at home, so I'm not. I burn my own grilled cheese and stuff like that, so I like a good toast and stuff. Yeah, it's an adjustment, but I've gotten used to it a little bit. But my meals aren't as good as my mom and dad's at the end of the day.
Well, for sure. The more practice that you get, the better you'll get at those grilled cheese. They'll be less black for you when you...
Yeah, I tend to forget about it a little too long, and then I'm like, oh, shoot. I'm making grilled cheese, and then it's black.
We got to get you a timer.
And that's what we do. I need that.
Avery, as you talk about your parents being great cooks, obviously athletic genes in your family. That your family's been involved in athletics for a long time.
Yeah, so my dad played at Co, and then my mom went to Mount Mercy, and she grew up with an athletic family too. My grandpa is in the Hall of Fame at Western Dubuque, and he coached wrestling and football, and now my uncle coaches football, and it goes far, far, far. And a funny thing is, my mom played basketball, obviously, and my sister played volleyball, and I was like, I can't be like my sister. I was like, I can't play volleyball. And my sister's 8 years older than me, so I kind of grew up in the volleyball gym, but I was like, I can't do it. So I was trying to force myself to really, really love basketball. I played it up till my freshman year, but at the end of the day, volleyball was my love, and here I am now.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. When did you know volleyball was maybe your opportunity at the next level?
I think from a very young age, like in the back of my mind, I was like, volleyball is it. Like, I know I love volleyball, but like, I'm stubborn, so I was like, I can't do it. I was like, I can't be like my sister, like I can't follow in her footsteps. And honestly, I wanted to be like my own person. My sister's set too, so that was a whole nother thing. So yeah, I think I played club since I was 11, so I've been in volleyball for a very long time. And when I was five, I was literally passing and peppering and doing all these things. And I grew up in the volleyball gym, and like volleyball is like the only thing I always wanted to do. I was setting against the wall, and my parents like, stop setting, because you just hear the banging on the wall and while they're trying to watch TV and stuff. And as a lefty, as a setter and a lefty, like it there's something special about it. So yeah, I always knew it was volleyball, but I didn't want it to be volleyball at the beginning.
Well, even though you're, as you said, stubborn, at some point in your great career, you're going to have to thank your sister for showing you the way.
I don't know. I'm just kidding. Yeah, well, she tells I'm a better volleyball player now, so I guess we can be friends, and I can be happy with that now.
Fair enough. What led you to South Dakota? Why was this a place that you thought was a good spot for you?
So again, back to my sister, she came on a visit here at Leanne's very first day as the head coach here. So obviously that didn't work out. She went to a small D1 school in North Carolina, but they loved the campus, and obviously we're sitting in the football field right now, and it's beautiful, and like the athletics is just superior here, like our facilities and everything, like everything's super nice. And I came on to a camp coming into my freshman year of high school, and I fell in love with the coaches and the players and everything. And Michael actually coached at my club when I was younger, and Shelly played at my club, so I've known them for a long time. Obviously Abby now actually played at my club too, so there was just like a long history. And so like here it felt like home, because I had those people from back home, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, I came to a camp and I just loved it, and so I just kept coming back to camps. And obviously they can't talk to me until my June 15th after my sophomore year, and then I got the call. And my parents said I didn't really give another school a chance, but it's just because I knew this was the school for me. And yeah, and I just love the players, honestly, and the coaches, and they honestly just care about you as humans too, and they look at you more than a volleyball player, and they want to just make sure you're okay. And they always ask you, how's college going? Like, how's classes? Are you doing okay mentally? Are you sleeping at night? Like, they care more about you as humans than volleyball players. And obviously they have a lot of success here and stuff like that too, so that there was never a con to me coming here.
Well, obviously you really enjoy the team. What do you like about this group on the volleyball floor that makes you feel like this can continue this successful run that this program's had and have a good year in league play?
We're just super competitive and just want to get better every day. We come into the gym, we have a lot of depth, so everybody's fighting for a spot every single day. And we're all just passionate about the sport we're playing, and we love the cheering and stuff. You guys can see that we're shoving people around and going crazy on the court, and that just brings fun to the game at the end of the day. And like we said, like, we're not a team that can just go out there and do business and be serious. Like, we got to have those like goofy moments, that because that's what makes it fun for us, and that's what at the end of the day what makes us play our best.
I know you're only a freshman, so things can change over the next few years, mm-hmm. but do you know what you want to do after college and maybe the career path you want to pursue?
Oh, that's a tough question, but I'm planning on graduating in 3 years with a minor in business and my major in kinesiology and sports management. I came in with 24 credits from high school, so I can, and then I'm going to get my master's my last year. I really have no idea what I want to do. Something behind the scenes of sports, so athletic directing. It's really wide for me, but I'm going to graduate in 3 years and then get a master's.
But something in sports, you hope, which means that's been a big part of your life.
Yes. Like I said, I grew up in the gym, and I've always just loved sports. I love watching football. I love watching basketball. My dad is a big golf player, so we watch golf a lot and tennis. And we like to watch rugby for some reason. We like to watch them just tackle. And, yeah, so, yeah, sports is my love, and I don't think – I've always said that I'm a very active person, so I've always said that I can't just sit at a desk all day. My parents are both in numbers. My dad is a loan officer, and my mom does stuff with finance, and doesn't seem like something I could do. And then my sister's a dentist. She likes all the medical stuff, and that's also – I like sciences, but I don't like all the gross stuff.
Yeah.
So I think sports is my way to go because that's been my love for forever.
You've experienced a couple of home matches so mm-hmm. far. Now you're back at home this week, and obviously got plenty of home matches coming up on the schedule, and including hosting the Summit League Volleyball Tournament here in a couple of months. The atmosphere at the South Florida game was remarkable. I know you were able to feed off of that and enjoy it, and probably one of the greatest atmospheres you've been a part of in your career. How would you describe that, and what would your message be to fans to try to make that atmosphere happen every single home game?
Oh my gosh, I can't, like, we always talk about it, like, that was the loudest the SDSC has ever been, and the fans, like, never let up. We were down 8-1 in the fifth set, and, like, who comes back from that, right? And we then went on that run at the end, and the fans just kept getting louder and louder and louder, and, like, I couldn't hear myself talk at the end of that game, and oh my gosh, those feelings when you talk about it just keep coming back. And like, honestly, like, those fans is honestly what helped us get through that game. And Leanne said, do you want to regret, like, we have these amazing fans, do you want to regret, like, not giving your all at the end? And they just, let's go Yotes and USD and all these things, like, they did not stop. And oh my gosh, yeah, they didn't stop. And I just think when the fans helped us the most at that game, and we want them to keep coming back, and we're hoping that game just gave them that little spark, like, oh, I want to come back to a USD volleyball game. And we're going to fight like heck to keep winning for you guys. And yeah, we always thank our fans. Like, the fans never go unnoticed, and we're just really grateful for the support we have here.
More opportunity coming up this week. Avery, good luck this week and the rest of the season. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
That's Avery Van Hook. She is the true freshman setter who's been starting at the University of South Dakota. Her team back home this week for two matches. They'll take on Kansas City on Thursday night and then Denver on Saturday afternoon. Coyotes are 6-6 on the season. South Dakota football is set to open up conference play this week when the Coyotes travel to Fargo. They'll take on North Dakota State, with kickoff set for 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon inside the Fargo Dome. Had a chance this week to catch up with Sam Niederman. He is in his first season as the radio play-by-play voice of North Dakota State. Talk to him about what the Coyotes can expect from NDSU. Sam, we get set for Missouri Valley Football Conference play, and I know you're in your first year with the NDSU radio broadcast. So first of all, welcome to the league. I'm sure you've had a good time to the start of a year with the number two team of the country.
Thanks, John. Yeah, it's been fun. Definitely been a whirlwind here the last 2 months being with the NDSU program, but it's been off to a good start, that's for sure. The Bison look good, and what could be better than being with a program that's won 17 national championships? So they've got it going on, and this looks like another championship-caliber Bison team.
You know, one thing that jumped out to me when you look at North Dakota State is that two of their top three rushers are the quarterback position. They and it doesn't feel like we've seen that a lot out of NDSU. They've had a phenomenal rushing attack for a long time, but you see that and it just jumps out that they really run that two quarterback system well.
Yeah, I think you've got multiple weapons, John, on this NDSU offense. You look at it and they average 278 yards on the ground per game, one of the best marks in the country, one of the best marks in the Valley. This is a team that very much so is still committed to the run. Last year, they had the number four rushing attack in the country, but it was a little unbalanced. NDSU was bottom five in all of FCS in passing. I mean, this was a team that ranked 118th in passing last year. This year, things have opened up. Passing attack is much more efficient. The Bison are top 10 in the country in passing efficiency as a team. And as you alluded to, John, yeah, both quarterbacks have made an impact, particularly on the ground, with Cam Miller being the primary starting quarterback, and he is the undisputed starter. It is Cam's job right now. He is QB1, but Cole Payton has been a great complement to Cam as a runner, and he is huge lead rusher, as you talked about. He started off at the beginning of the year. I mean, it was incredible the way that he played at US Bank Stadium, the home of the Minnesota Vikings, in the season opener for NDSU. He had a 70-yard touchdown run, and that was kind of the spark for Payton with these explosive plays. He's hit a couple of home runs, if you will, a 70-yard run against Eastern Washington in the opener, a 61-yard run against Maine. That was just – I mean, John, I was watching this, and I was like, wow, what a highlight run. I mean, broken tackles and outrunning linebackers and safeties and – just making it look easy. So Cole Payton, certainly a special player when it comes to his ability to make plays with his feet. And we know what Cam Miller can do as a runner. I mean, last year, this is a guy who was the Missouri Valley Football Conference co-leader in rushing touchdowns. He had 15 of them a year ago, and he's already got four to open up 2023. So he's on pace for another big-time output in terms of rushing touchdowns. So he got the two quarterbacks. Quarterback run game is integral to this offense. And then you've got a good stable of running backs: Tamarick Williams, TK Marshall, Barika Penu, Owen Johnson. There's a lot of depth, not only in the running back room, but just in the skill position guys that are in this offense as a whole. You got a ton of receivers who have contributed, a ton of tight ends, ton of fullbacks. So that's kind of the calling card of the NDSU offense that I think Coyote fans will see in this game, is that NDSU will mix and match personnel packages. It won't be quite as heavy as last year, right? But I think you still could see some of those two tight end, two fullback packages like you would see from maybe a year ago, but also a lot more shotgun, a lot more three receivers, a tight end, and a back, 11 personnel, as we call it. So it's a diverse offense. It's a versatile offense, and certainly one that can beat you in multiple ways.
You know, they don't ask Cole Payton to throw the football around a lot, just 11 attempts this season. But when Cam Miller's thrown it, he has been efficient, 80%. That's 50 of 62, four touchdowns, no interceptions. Obviously, a very smart quarterback and makes good decisions.
Yeah, no doubt, John. I mean, he's coming off of arguably one of his best performances ever at NDSU against Central Arkansas before the bye week in the non-conference finale. He hit 18 of 19 in that game. He finished hitting his last 17 throws. I mean, it was remarkable. He set a single-game mark in completion percentage in NDSU history, hitting 94% of his throws. It was the best completion percentage by a Bison quarterback that had ever thrown more than 10 times in a game. The second highest overall. There had been a record of a 10-for-10 game by Steve Walker back in 2004. But you look at Cam, his confidence is there, man. I mean, he has really blossomed. This is his fourth year in the program. He's a familiar face to teams around the Missouri Valley. He started in the 2021 spring playoffs as a true freshman. He led the Bison to a national championship the next year in the fall of 2021. And last year was his first year as the full-time starter. So this is a guy who's got experience. He knows this offense. He is cool, calm, and collected, and knows how to get the ball out quickly and distribute it to the guys around him who can help out and make plays. So this is the best of Cam Miller we've seen from a throwing perspective, leading the country in completion percentage right now. You said 80%, right on the money. I mean, Nobody's got a better mark in all college football, regardless of level. So it's been an impressive start for Cam, and I'm curious to see how he continues it, you know, being at home at the end of this three-game homestand in the Fargo Dome for NDSU. And, you know, he'll be tested, right? USD's got a few players on that defense who are, you know, all-conference caliber players. As you know, John, Miles Harden at corner, I think, is going to be a really good test for the Bison on the perimeter. And, of course, the linebackers and Brock Mogensen and Stephen Hillis. So a couple of good guys who will be counterparts to the Bison offense, but there's no doubt that it kind of starts and ends with Cam Miller. And this NDSU team, they'll kind of go as far as he does, as far as his development in the passing game. And so far, it's off to a really strong start.
Obviously, got to have a great relationship with Cam Miller and Cole Payton, the way they hand the baton to one another and run that two-quarterback system. How about the defense? I saw five interceptions. Tell me you got real excited for Eli Mostert, the big man, getting that INT for a TD.
You got to love a big man touchdown, right? You got to love it. I was hooting and hollering. We were all hooting and hollering. I mean, what a moment. I'd say that's the play of the year right now for NDSU, and I think it's going to be hard-pressed to find another play that could top it, right? I mean, Eli Mostert's first career touchdown, he batted that ball up into the air to himself and then took it the other way. And, you know, rumbling, tumbling, stumbling, as we like to say, for the big guys. So that was an awesome moment. And, yeah, this defense has really answered the bell, because there are a lot of new faces on the Bison defense. They lost a ton of starters from a year ago, particularly in the secondary. They lost Michael Tutsi, Dawson Weber, Destin Talbert. All those guys graduated. They lost a few other guys via the transfer portal. So you were looking at, kind of coming into the season, NDSU without its top six in the secondary from a year ago, which is pretty crazy. They basically graduated 60 starts from a year ago in terms of the two safeties and two corners that started all 15 games. So they had a lot to fill in the third level of the defense, and so far it's gone all right. Cole Wisniewski, who used to be a linebacker, has moved to safety, and that move has paid off tremendously. He's got three interceptions already this year. A couple of them came in the main game. That was game two on the year. Had one on opening day against Eastern Washington in Minneapolis. So he's a ball hawk, somebody to watch in this game, who has really transitioned nicely in that safety role and has anchored the secondary for NDSU. In addition, you got Jaden Price, who has really stepped up at cornerback. He's a sixth-year player, a captain, a dynamic punt returner as well, who's got a few career punt return touchdowns. Look for him in the special teams game, but also just at cornerback. He's done a really good job assuming the alpha role at corner for NDSU this season. And he had played a lot of snaps at corner before. He started games at corner before, but now he's the guy at corner, and he's embraced that and played really physical, not only just in the pass game, but in run support too. He's had some nice plays and has kind of come in the backfield. So the personnel has stepped up for NDSU in terms of the secondary. And then you've got a defensive coordinator that Coyote fans are very familiar with in Jason Petrino, right? Was a coordinator for USD from 2012 to 2015. Coordinated the Coyote defense in 2015, the last time that USD came to the Fargo Dome and had an upset against NDSU, a famous one against Carson Wentz and the Bison. So Coach Petrino, first year in the program, has done a terrific job. I think he's brought some good pressures into the mix. And, you know, he's coordinating a defense that's one of the top defenses in the country right now. So I think that's a really cool tie-in that we've got on Saturday with this matchup, with Jason Petrino being on the NDSU sideline this time, when you kind of look at this matchup as it went in 2015.
Yeah, you know, he spent a lot of time in the Valley coming over from Southern Illinois, and obviously had been at USD prior to being an NAIA head coach. So we're excited to see Jason Petrino. I know always treated a lot of people really good around USD. You know, as you talk about the defense, and obviously that's always a strong point for NDSU. They kind of have had strong defenses for a long time, and that's what leads to your championships. Special teams really stood out to me in that this is a veteran group here with the punter, the kicker. You got, obviously, you mentioned Jaden Price, experience in the return game, but veteran group certainly helps this team.
Yeah, no doubt, John. You've got Griffin Crosa, who's hit 100-plus consecutive extra points That is climbing up the Missouri Valley record books. So knock on wood, hopefully I didn't just give him the announcer's jinx there. But he's definitely been reliable for NDSU, and his range has been, you know, in the high 40s to low 50s. That's where he can hit it in terms of a field goal when called upon. And then Caden Steindorf, veteran punter who has really crossed his T's and dotted his I's so far this year. He performed really well in the opener at U.S. Bank Stadium, pinned Eastern Washington inside the 24 times. So ended up earning a special teams player of the week honor with that. And then you've got a good snapper in Hunter Brosio, right, who's an all-conference snapper and also plays fullback in the NDSU offense. So pulls a double shift there, just scored his first career touchdown in the non-conference finale against Central Arkansas. So it's a really good group. I think the third phase of the game can't be overlooked. It's helped NDSU in years prior, and they have a blocked kick this year as well. Eli Mostar, the same all-conference D-tackle who had the pick six that we referenced earlier, he had a blocked kick in the opener. So it's a good special teams unit, certainly one that NDSU's counted on so far, and they've delivered every time they've been asked.
You know, the expectation always is that that NDSU will compete for national championships, and they kind of expect that up there in conference titles and be in the playoffs, make a run of the playoffs. You've seen this team out of three games so far, and now obviously we'll get into Valley play, which is always a grind in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. What has to improve, in your opinion, with NDSU if the Bison are going to make a deep run again?
Well, I think this is an NDSU team that has a chip on its shoulder and is certainly hungry from what happened a year ago. You know, it's a program that you see it in Frisco every year. You see it in the national championship. And until last year, it was perfect in the national championship, right? 9-for-9 until a defeat against South Dakota State. So you kind of do some reflecting and looking in the mirror. And I think that's kind of what the program did in the off season. And the bottom line is you've got a group and a coaching staff that's invested in getting back to Frisco and this time winning it. And I think you've got a team that looks like a championship caliber team. The veteran leadership has been tremendous. I mean, the six captains on this team, all of them are first year captains. And, they were all voted by their teammates as captains, and I think they've really set the tone in it being a player-led program, and your leaders and your best players setting an example is something that you always want, and that's a hallmark of a championship team. So I think this team has it, and I think that they've taken some steps to improve on some of the things that were weak spots from a year ago. We referenced the passing game. This offense certainly flows better. There's more balance. There's still a component of the run game that will always be a fundamental when it comes to NDSU, but there's a complement there with the passing game. And there's a receiver group that this coaching staff feels really strongly about being one of the most talented positions that the team has to offer. And they're going to utilize that. So we've seen that this year with guys like Zach Mathis and Eli Green and Rajon Nelson, and being able to put them in different spots and get them the ball in different ways. So I think to answer your question, John, you'd like to continue seeing this passing game flourish. I think that's what's going to give NDSU the best shot at winning the Missouri Valley Conference and winning against South Dakota State once that matchup comes around, because, you know, we know that's probably going to be for most of the marbles, if not all, when it comes to the Valley. So, And also, I think being able to contend in the trenches, right? I think we saw last year in the national championship game a rarity. It was NDSU being beaten at the line of scrimmage against South Dakota State. So this is a group that's got a really strong offensive line. I like the five that the Bison have. You know, Jalen Sundell at left tackle has been a really good, strong piece for NDSU. He's on the Senior Bowl watch list, a guy who had started at center heading into this year, but made a position change to left tackle and has taken it in stride. Everybody else around him is a really veteran group. Brandon Westberg at center, Jake Kubis, Gray Zabel, Mason Miller. This is a team that has an offensive line tradition, and I'd like to continue seeing this O-line block up correctly for this Bison offense. And on the same side, on the defensive line, right, you got to be able to get after the quarterback and stop the run. And there's a lot of depth in that room. You'll probably see about 9 to 10 different guys rotate in on the Bison defensive front, which is a really healthy number to have, as you know. So that's what I think are going to be the key ingredients for NDSU if they want to get back to the national championship and ultimately win it. So, but as you know, we're just getting started in conference play, so a long, long way to go.
Couple more things for you. First off, the week, obviously, it's homecoming week for NDSU and the football team. I'm sure not too worried about all of that, but always an exciting time. How's the atmosphere and the week in Fargo this week with homecoming?
Yeah, you know, John, I was at practice earlier today, and you could just kind of feel it, right? You could feel the sense of a homecoming football game. It feels like fall in Fargo right now. It's just nice and crisp, just that comfortable 70 degrees with a little chill at night. I mean, it's perfect. It's football weather. You're going to have the homecoming parade on Friday with a lot of festivities, and that's going to be fun. The parade normally held downtown, from my understanding. Well, this year it's going to be back on the NDSU campus right down University Boulevard, from my understanding. So that's going to be really neat. I'm excited to see that. It's my first year here with the program, and I think that's a tradition that everybody is held in high esteem. And, you know, it's always cool when you got people coming home. This is a Hall of Fame weekend for NDSU athletics, so they're inducting multiple honorees from multiple sports over multiple eras. A couple of football players are getting in, as well as the 1983 national championship team at NDSU. That team was the first one to actually win it in the NCAA Division II playoffs back in 83. So it'll be cool to have that team back, and they'll be honored during Saturday's game as well. So a lot of people coming back from an alum standpoint, some Hall of Famers, and a lot of family and friends that are associated with the Bison football program. So certainly going to be a scene. They're expecting a big crowd, and I believe it's a gold out as well. So it's going to be a lot of yellow and gold in the stands, and should be a good atmosphere. Always a tough atmosphere when it comes to the Fargo Dome.
No doubt about it. How about for our fans making their way up there? You got any dining options maybe that they should check out in their time in Fargo? If of course, with Hall of Fame and homecoming, they can even find a spot to go eat anywhere.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be definitely a packed weekend. I'll give my best recommendations from 2 months with boots on the ground here. I love this spot in downtown Fargo called Pounds. Like, I put on a few pounds. I think that's what they were going for with the name, maybe. But they have a really good chicken sandwich there, and it's a delicious bite. So if you like kind of a fried chicken sandwich, I would check out Pounds in downtown Fargo. Boiler Room in downtown Fargo is a really neat spot. It's in Roberts Alley, which is a kind of cool little alleyway, as the name says, in downtown Fargo, with some neat restaurants and a couple little shops and stuff. So that's a cute little area to check out after the game. You've got this another place called Beer and Fish that has tremendous fish and seafood. I love the walleye there. So if you've got an appetite for walleye, go check out Beer and Fish. And you can get a nice beverage there as well, hence the name. Where else, John? I'm trying to think. I feel like I've hit up a couple other ones. Plaza Azteca is a nice spot for Mexican food. If you like Mexican, which I love Mexican. So, yeah, those are a few of my recommendations as far as some of the local spots in Fargo. And I'm still learning them, too. So it should be fun, though. Downtown will be looking cool at night, that's for sure, with the homecoming crowd.
No doubt. We'll check it out. Should be a great atmosphere, and it's always fun to start conference play. Sam, really appreciate the time as always, the insight on NDSU, all that good stuff. We'll look forward to seeing you this weekend.
Thank you, John. I appreciate you having me. We're looking forward to having you guys up at the Fargo Dome, and it's going to be a fun one to open up Valley Play. Much appreciated.
That's Sam Niederman. He is the radio play-by-play voice for the North Dakota State Bison, and a good preview of NDSU, what we can expect this week when Coyote football heads to NDSU for a Saturday matchup to open up conference play. It's also homecoming for NDSU. Coyotes, USD, I should say, 0-4 all-time playing NDSU on its homecoming. So it's time for that win number one. Coyotes haven't won in Fargo since 2015, and we can all remember the Miles Bergner kick that silenced the Fargo Dome on a Saturday in North Dakota. All right, before we wrap things up, let's take a look at what's going on in Coyote Athletics women's soccer Thursday at 4 o'clock against North Dakota. Summit League action. Volleyball continues in Summit League play on Thursday night. They'll take on Kansas City at 7 o'clock. Coming up on Friday, women's tennis is at the Colorado State Fall Invite. That will run through the weekend. Swimming and diving will host the red versus white event, the meet in Vermilion at 6 o'clock. That is on Friday evening. Women's triathlon competes on Saturday in Spearfish at the BHSU Relays. That's a 10 a.m. start time. Women's tennis continues in Colorado State. Softball has a fall match against Augustana at 11 a.m. at the softball fields at Nygaard Field in Vermilion. Swimming and diving has the alumni meet going on Saturday at 11 a.m. Volleyball takes on Denver at noon. That is a Saturday matchup for Summit League Volleyball. And, of course, football is in Fargo to take on North Dakota State at 1 o'clock. You can watch that game on Midco Sports Channel number 2, or you can always listen on the Coyote Sports Network. We would love to have you. Coming up on Sunday, women's tennis wraps up their event at the Colorado State Fall Invite. Women's triathlon at the Black Hills Collegiate Cup in Belle Fouche. That is set for a noon start time on Sunday. And then coming up on Monday and Tuesday, women's golf remaining out west in Tacoma, Washington. It's the Pat Lesser Harbottle Invite. It's hosted by Seattle University. The Coyote women's golf team will compete on Monday and Tuesday. And just a heads up, coming up next week on Thursday, Corey Jenkins, interim athletic director at USD, will speak with at lunch with the U, presented by the Howling Pack. That is in Sioux Falls at the Pizza Ranch on the 41st Street location. So check all of that out coming up on next Thursday. That is October the 5th, lunch with the U in Sioux Falls. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. I hope you enjoyed this show. Tanner Peterson, Avery Van Hook, Sam Niederman, great stuff from all of them, and we certainly appreciate you listening each and every week to the Yotecast podcast. As always, for scheduling and ticket information, go to goyotes.com. I'm John Thayer. Have a great weekend. Until next time, stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.